Welcome to another captivating Table for Two edition of the Deliberate Talks podcast, and I'm your host, Dakshin Adyantaya, eagerly tuning in every week to engage with extraordinary individuals who succeed over life challenges and yet continue to encourage others. Today's episode is a journey into the profound mind of a content creator who bravely sails across the daily struggles of producing valuable content, fostering community engagement, and gracefully handling trolls. Yes, I'm talking about none other than Ankur Variku. Ankur is an entrepreneur, a best-selling author, an online educator, a content creator with over 15 years of experience in the internet and technology industry. He's also the author of two books, Do Epic Shit and Get Epic Shit Done, that has inspired millions of readers to pursue their passion and potential. Today, as a content creator, he engages with a community of over 9 million followers, sharing content around personal finance, startups, careers, and education. In our conversation today with Ankur, we discuss how one can navigate trolls, failures, and processes to transforming into becoming a strong social media persona. All this with Ankur Variku, right after the short intro.
This is the Deliberate Talks weekly podcast, powered by the Pixelated Egg Digital Ventures.
And we're back. How are you doing today?
Very well, Dakshin. Thank you so much for having me.
Ankur, it's delightful to watch your smiling face always on camera. It kind of inspires and motivates a lot of people like us to, you know, just keep watching good content and good creators bringing a smile to everyone's face on a daily basis. I'm going to ask you, if you were paid for every comment that you were trolled, what would your valuation today be?
I can assure you, Dakshin, it wouldn't be as much as what we are making as a business today. So the challenge with the 5% that is so vocal and so loud, and that's frankly their objective, so they do win at that, and credit to them for that, is that it's almost always just the 5%. There's a 95% which are mute spectators, right? People like you, I hope, who are just silently applauding and getting it done, and they're the ones who make this engine work and make it fly. So I can assure you that if I were to get even a dollar for every troll that hits me up, I'd still be way, way, way below than what we're doing right now.
Awesome. So today we're going to get a little more deeper into the head of Ankur Variku, because sure. I really, really, really want to understand, how do you manage to be so calm, warm, and turn up every single day on our feeds? Which is also a complaint for a lot of people, saying we see too much of Ankur Variku.
I know.
But the first thing, to be very honest, from the troller's perspective as well as from a well-wisher's perspective, right? The world chooses to talk about success. You drifted towards failures, right? Great lessons for a lot of people. But how do you manage to find so many failures in life?
I'd be surprised if I come across anybody who hasn't had that list. I think what we... There are two admissions here, and I want to make those. Number one is, of course, those failures aren't as big as they seem. But because I'm zeroing on them, I'm making them grander than what it is. And of course, there's a lesson attached to it. They become over-dramatized. Think of it like a Netflix series or anything where you're picking up a small thing and then you're making it big. I think a good example of that is Planet Earth, Richard Attenborough going mm-hmm. through the wonderful narration, but at the end of it, the visual is just an animal chasing another animal. Like, it's just as plain as that. It's just really not a big deal, but you add that music and you add that fervor and you add that sensationalism, and of course you add that mystery, and it becomes a tale to tell. And that's my job. I'm a storyteller, and I love telling stories. And I certainly believe that a lot of people, particularly in our culture, we do not reflect upon the mistakes that we have made, because our culture often tells us, koi baat nahi, bade bade desho mein choti choti galtiyan hoti rehti hain, aage badho, and then we just very quickly move on from our failure without stopping to reflect and pause, why did it happen in the first place? I have done that a lot, and I've gained a lot from that, so that's what I do. So that's the first admission. It certainly isn't as devastating or as crippling as it makes it to be when you just look at that in that one zone.
Right.
The second is, I don't think people recognize this as much, that I am 43. Hmm. I've lived life. I have two kids. I have been through multiple life changes. I grew up in an India which is very different from what it is today. I grew up around parents and around schooling, which is very different from what people grew up with. I've seen 1980s to 2023, and in these 43 years, the world's shifted. Forget this country and forget me. So there is a lot. There is certainly a lot. And I really don't have to try hard to come up with one another and one another and one another. It feels like, you know, magician's hat, but at the end of it, I literally have to sit down as like, okay, what happened 20 years back that I feel would be a good lesson to share in the hope that it helps someone who's in their 20s and then is as easy as that.
Right. Makes sense. Absolutely. And these videos do wonder. They're actually, if I look at it, it's like someone seeking motivation, a value, a learning from a familiar face or a stranger online when they scroll through those videos. But comments also come in with videos. And a lot of times I hear you say where you ignore the first half of your day, you prefer not reading those comments because it kind of affects you as well, because you're a human at the end of the day, right? Keyboard warriors don't understand that. There's always that section where they would rant, they would vent because they might have a bad day. And it's not just particularly your case. I see hundreds of creators struggle with coping up with this today. I want to understand, regardless of the fact that you are Ankur Variku, when you shut that laptop, when you switch off the phone, after reading a comment, what really goes into your head? How do you process it? How do you come back the next day and start continuing your work?
That's a great question. So there are three parts to it, and they don't happen necessarily in order, but they certainly happen irrespective of which order they follow. Number one is a sense of empathy towards the person. Mm-hmm. Because I genuinely believe, and I'm not being very melodramatic and virtuous here, I genuinely believe that no one gets up in the morning wanting to fuck around with someone else's life.
True.
But if they do end up doing that, it's because there is something that's going on in theirs that is manifesting in that hate and that anger towards somebody else. Why else would that be triggering? So there's a part that I empathize with, which is like, I don't even know why this person would say this to a complete stranger who has no idea of what's going on in my life. Like, they've looked at a very small microcosm of my life and then made it seem like it's the entire piece. And whatever emotions have been generated from that has just come from that. So that's one, which is a sense of empathy. The second one is a complete sense of detachment. Mm-hmm. And it happens instantly because I genuinely have a wonderful life. I have a lovely family. I have my own rituals. I am at peace with my own self. I really like my own company as well. And the minute I just zoom out and I recognize where I am, I have the ability, and I say this with absolute seriousness, I have the ability to say goodbye to every public persona that I have today and still be just as happy, if not more, as I am today or right now. So it's a complete sense of detachment from all of this noise. And the third one, which is the clown in me, is what will be the best way for me to respond to this with absolutely diametrically opposite an emotion as was expected? And that will be the challenge that I'll throw. And I call it the clown in me because I do recognize that I make fun of myself at that point. Mm-hmm. I maybe even mock my own self. I'm self-deprecating. I would say something that would be in a friend circle and whatnot, but I wouldn't shy away from doing that. So here's a good example. I often go through my Instagram and I'll see in all the comments, 95%, 96%, wonderful, lovely, heart, claps, love coming in. And then there'll be this one person. So pretty much like the first question you asked, Very recently, I did a post and they're like, bhai, bar bar wahi same kahaniyan sunke na thak gaye hain. Kuch naya kar sakte ho? And I responded to that, ki aap kabhi bhi mujhe unfollow or mute kar sakte hain. And main aapko daave ke saath ye likh ke de sakta hun, ki wo is comment ko likhne se zyada tez hoga. And then I pinned their comment to the post.
Mm-hmm.
And now this post is going to millions of people. Because right. that's the kind of reach that just automatically happens.
Right.
And the first thing that they will see pinned will be this hate comment.
True.
They most likely will not even see my response. And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I actually love that. I love that because I feel that I've given visibility to this person in some way, diffusing what they wanted to do. And at the same time, responded in a manner that they didn't expect. And I'm just silently applauding my own self in front of the mirror saying, well done. Good job.
Do they come back again?
Often they do. Like it was interesting. About a week back, somebody made such a comment on YouTube and I then responded with the same thing. And then the guy responded and says, मैंने आपके इतने सारे वीडियोस पे कमेंट किया है, आपने आज तक कभी रिप्लाई नहीं किया, आज गलती से मैंने इस भावना से कर दिया और आपने मेरे को पिन ही कर दिया है, माफ कर दो, राइट? सो आई डोंट थिंक पीपल रियली रियली mean that hate in that moment. But because it's just so flippant and so easy and the internet has made it so trivial, correct. You could just do it without bearing the repercussions. But once they see the repercussion, and particularly when the repercussion is not negative, but actually it's not even a repercussion in that sense. It's an effect that you've made where you only heard something hopefully positive from the other person or just generosity. They'll be like, what the hell was I thinking?
Mm-hmm.
And that happens more often than not. One hack that always works, if it's visible, I'll always address them by name.
Right.
I'll always address them by name. And if you really think about it, it takes a very different level of asshole to be acknowledged by your name and yet continue to act like an asshole.
Right.
Like that will be really hard.
Right.
Like Hardik comes in, writes a comment, whatever it is. And I'm like, hey, Hardik, thank you for your feedback. I see where you're coming from. I wish you had written it in a positive spirited manner. But you know what? Shit happens. I take it for what it is and let it be. God bless you, my friend. It will take a very, very different asshole-ish Hardik to be like, fuck you. And most people won't. Right. So right. This is a hack and I don't know why people don't deploy it. It's just so, so easy.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, most of the trolls are behind some random usernames, but if they have their name there, I will always address them.
Right. You know, interesting you picked up upon that comment not being responded to and hence his behavior was that. We see that with a lot of content creators and Gary is also a perfect example where, you know, he comes online, he tries to put in anything in people's start just, hi Gary, good morning or whatever, right? They want that one reply from Gary. And I see that similar pattern in your content as well, where a lot of people want you to respond, but you can't keep everyone happy. What happens in such the first 10 minutes of that content going in, that chaotic mindset, what runs in that mind? How do you filter who to respond, who not to respond?
There's frankly no logic. I'll be honest here that my pattern of replying to comments is very random. Whenever I get the time and I verily, like hypocritically, I don't spend a lot of time on social media.
Hmm.
My entire usage in a day will be like an hour at best across all platforms.
Okay.
So I very rarely do, but whenever I do, I'll be just scrolling through my posts, see the comments. And if there is anything that I feel like, I'll just reply. Hmm. And I really don't put a lot of effort into, am I picking somebody who has XYZ attributes or characters, wagera. I'm just responding to the content. Very rarely do I even read their names. I'm just responding to what they're saying. And it's absolutely random in that sense. And in that scrolling, if I come across a hateful comment or a mean-spirited comment or anything like that, then the three things that I just mentioned get activated. But more often than not, I'm just saying, thank you. Really love it. Keep up the good work. All the best. Hugs, whatever it is.
Right. Makes sense. Ankur, now getting into your content conversations, you know, the kind of different content that you create. Very interesting conversation. There was someone in my client room one day trying to map what kind of content does Ankur Variku create and why does it work so well. So it was a great discussion with varied topics where you cover things like relationship conversations, finance, startup, failure stories, life lessons, and parenting. There is a perfect balance for conversation for the Gen Zs as well as millennials. Now, I want to know, who does Ankur Variku talk to via his content? And secondly, how does he plan, research, understand, and get inspired to get to this conversation?
Sure. So this is something that we very carefully thought of. we treat every platform differently. And we genuinely believe that while there is no way to for us to accurately assess this, we believe that the overlap between our platforms is no more than 10-20%. And that means every platform is a unique entity. And every platform will then have a very different persona. So on Twitter, for example, I am a thinker and a reflector. So I'll often talk about things which are either end outcomes of my assessment and my learning or my personal story detailing itself, which will lead to that outcome. On YouTube, I'm a teacher. I'm always a teacher. So that'll be very slow. I'll be deliberate. I'll be like, dekho, wo dekho, whether it's personal finance, whether it's productivity, whether it's career, whether it's anything else. So I'm a teacher there. On Instagram, I'm this quote-unquote cool uncle who's also trying to be a friend. So I'm friendly, I'm approachable, but I'm also old in that sense.
Right.
So I'll often talk about things that you only get through age. So I'm not curating anything. I'll be like, here are the three things that you need to think about this or this, or here are the three things that I've figured. For example, one of the reels recently that did well was, how do you differentiate between a love and a crush? And it's only when you've gone through those multiple things, you get that. And there is like a 3-point checklist that you have around what is a love or what is a crush. And it just worked. And it worked because people are like, yeah, in our 20s, we're perpetually confused whether I'm in love with this person or I have a crush on this person. So there on LinkedIn, I'm an entrepreneur and a thought leader. So I'm talking about startups. I'm talking about work. I'm talking about corporate life because that's the space that I've been in and done that. On my podcast, I am genuinely a blabbler. I'm just blabbering towards something that I want to talk about. It's always a monologue. It's not this two-way conversation. And I don't invite any guests. I don't have any brands. It's just my space. And I record it in Hindi and in English both. And it just, in that literal moment, I was like, what do I want to talk about? I just make it a point and then just roll for 7 to 10 minutes. And that's it. It's done. On newsletter, I am a recorder. I'm recording my journey, what happened in my week, what book I read, what quotes I came across with, so on and so forth. So every platform has a different persona. And that's why the content treatment is also very different. It's usually a combination of the persona that we have on that and the content type / media type that best works on that platform.
Right.
And we've understood that over years. And we've also understood how to zero on to the persona and the TG that we want to speak to. And so every platform, we're speaking to a different audience. Different avatars. But the good thing is that all of those are in me. I don't have to become somebody else to create content on that platform. These are aspects of me and different attributes of me. I just seem to have just that persona on that platform.
And of these personas, which is your favorite?
Teacher, 100% teacher. I love being a teacher. I feel that's where my natural self is. It's where I gain the most as well from my experiences. So it's not a surprise that my startup is in the education space. That's where I want to be. And YouTube remains a place where, irrespective of how the videos have done, irrespective of what the performance is, we look at the data, we perhaps get disappointed and dejected if it doesn't do well, but we couldn't care less. We'll still keep doing the same thing because it's just something that comes naturally.
Super. And because you spoke about the analytics part as well in terms of how you analyze the reports and everything. Now, you know, you now have a team, and I think there used to be a time when there was no Varik crew. And you used to create a lot of content yourself. And I remember one of these instances where on Twitter, you actually just shared your content calendar or your content process. And I was one of them to reply there and say, this is gold because you're giving it for free. A lot of people used to sell it at some point of time via various mediums, right? Now that you have a team, you know, how is that process of content planning shifted? And how do you analyze with your team today in periods of low engagement and slow growth?
So we are a very, very process-driven team because I am a process-driven person and I love processes. I am an animal of repeatability and compounding because that's the only thing that's worked in my life. So I will do it ad infinitum. So everything that we do is a process. It's managed on a project management tool called Asana. Everybody has individual tasks that they are assigned to. They are very well aware of what the timeline expectation is from them. And the quality expectation is, of course, the same benchmark for everyone coming through. So whenever somebody starts their day, they have a list of things that they have to accomplish, and they just go about doing that. And it's clinical, it's asynchronous. They don't have to necessarily work with somebody else to get it done. And it all just comes in together at the end of it to find that piecemeal. So what's the big difference between when I was doing this solo and today I do it with the team is everything that I was doing at a solo level is now just broken into multiple parts where individuals are assigned for that. And we've just expanded the scale. So earlier we had just a few pieces of content going in. Today we have close to about 63 pieces of content that go out every week. And that's just synchronized in tandem. And it just works very well. Every Monday at 7 p.m. is when we gather as a team. So that's the only time we are synchronized as a team. And I'm a big fan of async work. And I believe that, which is a big departure, by the way, from my earlier beliefs in my startup avatar, when I was in venture funded companies and all that, I was like the office person. Like everyone needs to be in office. And that's when we vibe together. That's where the energy comes in. Everything is synchronized and so on. Now I'm completely at the opposite end of the spectrum. It's a fully remote team. We meet only once every quarter for an offsite and once every week for a synchronized catch-up where we go through the numbers at a headline level. So we see how every platform has performed and that's it. No more conversations. We then chit-chat about other things, updates, how things are, blah, blah, blah. And every Thursday in the first half, we go through every platform in a deeper manner, and that is only with the platform team. So we'll start with LinkedIn, then we'll go to Instagram, then we'll go to YouTube. Twitter, we don't, because I do it completely myself. So I just look at that data, it's recorded and everything. But that is the only point where we look at that data. We are very data-oriented, we are very process-oriented, but we just don't spend an inordinate amount of time consuming them and brainstorming and paralyzing ourselves with the analysis.
Wow. Thank you. This is like really consolidating to the entire content process of how Ankur Variku works on a daily basis. And I want to conclude this round of questions with something a little more positive. While we talk about failures, I want to talk about what successes Ankur Variku has been up to and what he's slaying to conquer in the next 1 month to 3 months, at least what's in the pipeline.
Frankly, nothing. I really don't know how to answer this question when people ask, like, what's up, what's new? Because there's nothing up and there's nothing new. It's just the same old process and it just keeps working and it takes us to milestones and destinations that we couldn't have imagined for ourselves. We're happy and we are grateful when we reach there. But there is no target. There's no goal. We are a company with, like, we recently hired an individual to manage our entire content operations. And I had my first one-on-one with him and he's like, what are the revenue goals for the company? It's like, none. And it's like, well how do we intend to grow? It's like, we couldn't care less. We'll just do what we have to do and it will automatically happen. You just control the controllables, control the input, and your output will be something that you can't control, but you'll only witness. And that's the way that I've learned it. And that's the way that I would recommend to anybody else as well. So there is nothing new. It's just the same old thing. It's the same process.
Any new books coming in?
Every year. So Jan 2024, we'll be launching our next book. It's called Make Epic Money and it'll be on personal finance. Hopefully the most conclusive book that every 20 and 30 year old will need around money. So we're working towards that and that's shaping up well.
Awesome. I can't wait to grab that book then. Awesome. Wonderful stuff. That brings us to the end of first round of questions. Now things are going to get a little more pace here. We are going to get into the rapid fire round of questions. So some cool questions coming swiftly at you. Ready for this?
Let's do it.
Okay. In 60 seconds, in your style of content, 6 tips of building a genuine connection with your audience, even in a highly curated or digital environment.
Oof. Number one, listen to them because they always will tell you what they want to know. Number two, do not assume that you know everything because there's always a lot more to know. Number three, consistency. When you show up every single day, people think of you as predictable and they start confiding in you. Number four, relatability. You have to speak not in the manner that you are comfortable with, but in the manner that they can comprehend you because that's what forms the connect. Number five, association. Everything around you, if static and repeatable, creates an association where people believe that this is going to stay. That's the most important thing. And number six, don't set goals, set habits. Because when you do that, those habits will compound to take you to destinations that you couldn't have set for yourself.
My goodness, flawless that was. Now, in 50 seconds, five habits of Ankur Variku that keeps him away from content burnout or creative block.
Number five, meditation. It's something that I do every day and I love doing this. Number four, reading. It's the most beneficial activity that I do for my mind. It's the diet for my brain. Number three, working out. Something I've been doing for the last 10 years and it sets me up. Number two, playing tennis. Tennis is a sport that I've actively followed almost all my life and I love playing it every day. Mm-hmm. And number one, spending time with my family and particularly traveling with them because that's when I recognize this is the only joy that I care about.
Wow. Awesome. In 40 seconds, if you were stuck in an elevator with three other people, who would it be and what epic shit would you four create together?
If I was stuck in an elevator with three other people, I'd love them to be Brian Chesky, the founder of Airbnb. I've learned a lot from him, observing him as a leader. I would love to spend time with Ratan Tata as well in there because this, of course, so much to know and the legacy that he's built in just one lifetime. And I would just love to spend time with Elon Musk as well for nothing else, just to figure out what is it that he does to keep track of his time.
Wonderful. Okay. In 30 seconds, what's the most funniest or weirdest rumor that you've ever heard about yourself on social media?
Oh, the funniest rumor that I've heard is that I'm a rich, spoiled South Delhi brat who was born into privilege. And of course, that's why he does all the shit that he does. Wow. None of which is true.
Okay. In 20 seconds, when you were growing up, who was the Ankur Variku in your life you listened to?
When I was growing up, my Ankur Variku was a fictional character. His name is Fox Mulder from the series X-Files. And he was the one who was constantly chasing the truth. And that's who I wanted to always be and hopefully still am.
Wonderful. And then finally, in 10 seconds, so this has come out of personal observation. And I'm really keen on knowing this. Earlier this year, when there was the Spotify Creators Program, and I happened to attend the event, and at the entrance, I spotted you and there were a lot of people running towards you to get selfies and autographs and everything else. And then there was this girl who came up to you and asked for your autograph. Interestingly, you refused to give her your autograph, but you took a selfie with her. And that got me curious because I want to understand the story behind why you probably didn't give her the autograph. Or is there a story behind it elsewhere?
No, there is no story. I just feel that giving an autograph is just too much of a celebrity thing. And I don't feel that in my own head. Selfie is something that I will click with my friends as well. So it feels a lot more personal and a lot more relatable. So that's why selfies.
I pretty much thought so that because this was a discussion. The friend standing next to me was also having saying, if Ankur already has his digital signature on every video that he puts, why is he not giving an autograph, right? So this was a very interesting observation that we had, and hence wow. I wanted to ask.
Well, I'm glad that you provoked this thought in me. Thank you.
Wonderful. And Ankur, with that, that's the wrap. And I can go on and ask you a lot of questions. And it's just amazing to know what all you have been doing in life. It's an honor to know you. It's an honor to host you. I really had fun hosting you. I hope you had your share of fun too.
Absolutely. I thoroughly enjoyed the questions. Thank you so much. They were very thought-provoking, got me to think that that's what I love the most.
Super. Delightful. Thank you so much. And I wish you nothing but the best, Ankur.
Thank you so much, Dakshin. All the best with you as well. Take care. Stay in touch. Bye.
And that brings us to the end of today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe, like, share to all the audio and video channels of The Deliberate Talks and The Pixelated Egg Digital Ventures. Join in next week for a Table for One edition. Until then, be curious, be adventurous, and never stop learning.